upon the listener. You are life in the human form, or the universe becoming extremely conscious of itself. I am your host, Bryce Deluca, and I am back with another edition of the Being Centered Podcast. Welcome one, welcome all. First time listeners, last time listeners. Thank you for joining me for another transmission. Let's get right into it. I don't want to waste any time. We have a packed transmission today. Top of the show, I want to discuss a little things, a little housekeeping with you guys. A couple of things. I've been getting some questions. And also some things that I've also been thinking about in regards to the direction of the podcast. I have my notebook here. I'm going to be writing down my thoughts as I speak them in order for me to be incredibly clear with what I'm about to say, because I'm going to be discussing some tough ideas, some very, very hard ideas. And I had a conversation this week about ideas in general, so hopefully I can frame that conversation I had with somebody near and dear to me about ideas in a way that can bring value to us all when we're discussing the direction of this podcast. But to start it off, I want to give my condolences, a little RIP. I want to say rest in peace to the AKAs. Not the sorority, but the AKAs in the beginning of the program. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a hell of a run. It's been a hell of a run for the Bob Ross of Buddhism, the Van Jones of vitriol, the Stephen A. Smith of spirituality, the Confucius of concentration, the Muhammad Ali of meditation. It's been a hell of a run for these monikers, but it's time for me to let them go. All things must go, and I'm letting the monikers go. Officially, I am dropping those things. It's time for me to evolve beyond those monikers. It hurts, but yeah, man. You know, I was just actually thinking about it this morning, where it's just, you know, the vigor, the energy you look for when you do something like that. It's losing its pizzazz, its sting. So I thought, let's just put it down. Holy shit. Where are my manners? How are you guys doing? How are you guys? I just get to talking, get to rambling, and I forget to check in. How are you guys doing? If you don't mind, can we do the little exercise where we put a number to how we're feeling and how our week is going? So, ladies and gentlemen, if you're out there, please indulge me. Close your eyes. If you're driving, do not close your eyes. If you're at work, do not close your eyes, but just, you know, visualize. Think of a number between 1 and 5, 1 being terrible and 5 being great, and assign that number to the current state of your week. Anywhere between 1 and 5. Just sit with it, interpret it, understand it. Maybe even ask yourself why. If you're having a 2, why is it a 2? If you're having a 3, why is it a 3? And if you're having a 5, why is it a 5? And yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's imperative that we even question why we're having a good week, because so we can reproduce the effects that are making us feel good. I have a saying that I tell to all my loved ones, that life is not about being happy, it's about finding your system to recreate happiness. Life is about knowing the things that make you happy, so when you're down, you can pick yourself back up. It's about establishing a system of beliefs so profound that you can withstand any tragedy, ladies and gentlemen. But I'm jumping ahead. By the end of this program, I hope that if you are having a 1 of a week, we're going to turn that 1 into a 2. If you're having a 2 of a week, we're going to turn that 2 into a 3. If you're having a 3 of a week, we're going to turn that 3 into a 4. And if you're having a 4 of a week, we're going to turn that 4 into a 5. And if you're having a 5 of a week, we're going to break the damn scale. So let's get right into the program. I want to start by doing some housekeeping, talking about the nature of the pod. what I'm looking for and where is it going. We're doing well overall. We're getting back to the groove of things for us to just be starting, for us to just be having 7 transmissions in total, perhaps. We're doing incredibly well. We're evolving. We're picking up pace. We're picking up speed. Pretty soon we're going to get video and we're going to be on YouTube very soon. Right now, there's something that I'm looking for. As you all know, so let me backtrack a little bit. I often get asked a question by family and friends. Why don't I market the podcast? The reason why I don't market is because I'm going to probably say something one day that is going to offend somebody. And so I enjoy not marketing the podcast because it allows me the freedom to get these thoughts off unprovoked. There are some things where I monitor what I say, and I monitor because it's helpful for me to ensure how I won't hurt somebody's feelings. Like, for example, during the last transmission, I went on a soliloquy about single mothers, but I cut that out of the program. It was towards the end. It was a great point that I think I made, but when listening back to it, I thought, I know a lot of single mothers and they might not enjoy my philosophical approach to their circumstance, as well-meaning as I may have been. So sometimes presenting somebody's real-world circumstance as an idea is offensive. So I do try to navigate in between where I am being Mr. Pontificator and when I'm just being a person, right? And I try to not generalize these ideas, however, but I try to generalize these ideas because I don't care about the specifics, right? We operate under archetypes, but that's getting a little lofty in my thinking for this program. But what I'm looking for primarily is why I don't market the podcast is for that reason, right? I like to kind of say things without offending people, right? And eventually, if I market enough, like if let's say if I was to market this podcast once a week, 2 times a week on Instagram, right? Posting clips 2 times a week on Instagram. I say enough interesting things that enough people are going to be like, huh, I want to check that out. And if I market it on Instagram twice a week, and then I do Google AdWords twice a week, expand, I'm going to gain enough people who are going to listen to this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm halfway decent at this. And so eventually people are going to come listen. However, it might not be the right people that I want to come listen. So they're going to come listen and they're going to find something wrong with it, right? There's going to be my tribe in between there who are going to understand. But as it expands, there are going to be some people who say, I don't really agree with that understanding of women. It's sexist. Or I don't really understand that perspective about Avatar. It's rude, right? I don't understand that perspective on transgenderism. It's false. So I just say, you know what? Let me just build my tribe organically, right? Who, when this podcast catches the ears of who it catches the ears of, I welcome them with open arms. We build a community. We dialogue. We chill. We hang out. We constructively critique each other. We exchange ideas across the aisle. We disagree. We agree. I just had a great conversation about Drake and J. Cole with Royal. Things like that are open to doing, right? That's how you find your tribe organically. And primarily it's because I don't really want money from this thing, right? I'm not seeking any financial compensation from this. I don't want to be a famous podcaster by any stretch of the imagination. I just like talking. I talk too much. So I like to talk into a microphone sometimes. And it's fun. It's a hobby. It's good to get these ideas off. And I think I can help people along the way. Because if I have the wisdom to do so, I think it will benefit multiple people. And maybe this is even hubris of me to even think and decide for myself, but if I think that I have something of value to say to people, then maybe they can have some value, right? If I think it's valuable, maybe somebody else out there will find it valuable. If it helped me, maybe I can help others. And the more people that I try to help, then it's a mutually beneficial experience. However, I'm trying to do that in a way that is not predicated on marketing, because I don't really want the wrong people to be here, right? Like me today saying RIP to the AKAs, that is something that only the first time and only the long time listeners will understand, because I've been saying AKA the Field Member, AKA the Bob Ross of Buddhism, AKA the Confucius of Concentration, AKA the Stephen A. Smith of Spirituality since the beginning of this podcast. And if I had a horn, and if I had bagpipes, and if I had a pastor in the room, we would lay these phrases down to rest properly. But only the longtime listeners understand the potency of that, because we have a small little tribe, a small little community, a small little fraternity and sorority inside of the fraternity that we've cultivated inside jokes. We cultivated inside patterns of behavior. We cultivated inside inside ball game type of environment situation. So things like that are just what I enjoy, right? I don't want to be broad. I want to be as insular as possible, and people just join and welcome in the dialogue. One day I'll probably start a Facebook group, or one day I'll probably start some sort of place that we all can hang out and talk, and like-minded people can cooperate with like-minded people. But for now, you know, we're loosely refitting the formula. I'm kind of like, it's like the Seven Samurai, or it's like, the White Lotus in Avatar, The Last Airbender, just getting the gang back together. You know, certain people who used to listen to this podcast aren't here yet, and eventually they'll be here. And so I'm just getting the gang back together as we start riding this ride of podcasting, this reinvigorated podcast lane once again. So thank you guys for that. And that's the reason why I don't market. Secondly, inside of that, I'm looking for somebody who can upload the audio of this podcast to YouTube twice a week. Just upload them to YouTube twice a week. Ladies and gentlemen, I am a semi-busy human being. I have a lot on my plate. I realized this probably like 2 weeks ago that your boy is just busy, and I'm just trying to expand in a way that is healthy for my mind, healthy for my spirit. So if anybody out there has the free time to upload the audio of this podcast 2 times a week on YouTube, and this is also going to be a little bit of a social experiment, I'm just going to bury this on YouTube. I'm not even going to tell anybody where the podcast can be found on YouTube, but it's going to be an easy enough guess to figure it out. But if somebody wants to just upload the audio twice a week on YouTube, I will give you $20 a week just to do that simple task. And then on top of that, the money that comes from uploading it on YouTube, you can keep it all. I don't want any of the resources that come from it. It all goes to you. So you create the YouTube channel, and you upload the content, and then you keep the money from the YouTube channel, and I give you $20 a week. If anybody wants to do that, please reach out. All you have to do is have a still image of the Being Centered logo, and I have to send you the audio, and then you can have at it. It is yours to do with, but just upload it. Upload the Sunday specials and the transmissions, and I'll give you $20 every week. So yeah, if anybody's interested in doing that, please reach out. Also, before we get into the program officially, I am looking for better intro music. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, better intro music. Has to be an instrumental, no words, just beat. My current intro music sounds a little bit generic, so I'm looking to expand it to give it more of a, just give it a good soulful, earthy feel. Something that fits the vibe and aesthetic of the pod. I'm looking for 2 intro songs, one for the Sunday special and one for the weekly transmissions. So if anybody makes music, if anybody knows somebody who makes instrumentals or beats and thinks they have a beat or instrumental that fits the vibe and ambiance of the podcast, please send it my way. Send it to my email address. Also, some of you guys have been asking about my email address. This email address is subject to change in the following weeks. I'm going to get a being-centered email address, but for now, my email address is raistoluka@gmail.com. That is R-A-I-S-T-U-L-U-K-A @gmail.com. And so without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to get into the program. Thank you for listening to the housekeeping portion. And let's start the goddamn transmission, man. The world has been kind of in shit, eh? The world has been in quite a kerfuffle in the last few months. I've been holding over talking about some of these things because I wanted to see how they were going to play out. And also, I kind of wanted to give my own perspective on things like Dave Chappelle and Kyrie Irving, right? And vaccine mandates. Ooh, the vaccine mandate. My God, we're so upset as a people. I want to hold on to talk about these things because I just want to see how they're going to play out and I want to see the public discourse on them. And I want to start with Dave Chappelle and his special, The Closer. Boy, what a brilliant piece of art. What a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant piece of art. I think it's one of my favorite Dave Chappelle specials that he's done in this Netflix era. The reason why I believe it's so beautiful is there's a certain structure that he abides by in these recent specials that is more narrative than comedic, and he blends in jokes to tell the story. These are essays in comedic format, and I don't think a lot of people are appreciating that level of precision where every word matters. He is up there not wasting a word. It's kind of the same experience that you have with masterful film, right? With great film like Dune, which I'm going to do a full-on review at the end of the pod. So around minute 45, if you're not interested in Dune or if you don't care about deep dives in movies, please, I recommend at minute 45, just turn off the pod because I'm about to sweat all over this microphone. And I'm about to just start talking about this science fiction masterpiece. But what great movies do, they don't waste a scene. They don't waste a frame. They don't waste a sentence. And you see the same thing in great books, great works of fiction and nonfiction. Every sentence matters. And what Dave Chappelle does inside of his specials, especially the ones on Netflix, is every single sentence, every single pause, every single word matters to the story that he's trying to tell. There is consistent references throughout in little nods, both loud and quiet, pauses, tonation. He plays it beautifully. And in talking with some of the homies about this special, they said that this isn't his funniest special. They've laughed harder at other specials that Dave has done. And I agree, right? This isn't his funniest special. But it's the only special that I believe he has crafted that there is a point to it. There is an idea that he's trying to execute. And this is why I enjoy ideas. What we tend to do in society today is have a problem contending with the idea, and we conflate the idea with the person. And rightfully so, right? There's been some terrible people who have subjugated and oppressed human beings off of the inception of an idea. But we also have to acknowledge that ideas can be separated from actions, which is why in the special, Dave consistently, ironically, calls himself transphobic comedian, to disarm. Because if you imagine somebody who is a racist or who is accused of racism, like, they wouldn't go on stage and say, "I'm a racist comedian." They may say they have racist ideas, prejudiced ideas, but they wouldn't vocally say, yo, I am a racist comedian. But Dave goes the extra mile to disarm both the audience and his detractors by calling himself a transphobic comedian. But he came into this with a set of ideas that I believe are worthy of inspection. And so if you guys don't mind, I want to just go over some of these ideas. I'm sorry if you thought I was just going to rattle off the jokes and laugh and giggle, but I think we have some philosophical work to parse apart so we can make sense of what Dave is trying to say. So what foregrounds a lot of Dave's approach, the masterful approach, is systems, protest, justice, race, and otherness. And so, around the first episode, I discussed the potency of systems and what systems are and what they do, right? And a lot of the things in this podcast are going to be self-referential. So if you haven't heard how I broke down systems, I'm going to briefly break down how systems work in this moment, right? A system has three components. Once again, component number one captures human nature. Component number two, desired results. And those results are reproducible. And number three, they can't be revolutionized. Because if you can change the system too much, it's not a system. And I would say like 3.5 is they maintain the founder's ideology. Right? So if the reason why America is a system, it's a system before it is a government, is because the founding fathers implemented an idea inside of the framework of this institution that we call a country. Right? And that's what I'd rather say. Let me rephrase that. This country is more of a system than a country, right? Not all countries are systems, by the way. Like Uganda isn't a system. It's a country. And you usually are able to break down which countries fall under the system category and which countries fall under the pure country category with the first, second, and third world tier mechanism that we've used to construct what a civilization that is well-functioning is, that is developed, versus a civilization who is not. A civilization that is working like a system is usually a first world country. Like when Donald Trump said a while ago that African nations are shithole countries, you can find that offensive, right? It's a bad thing to say, right? Bad thing to say. But if we peel apart what he's trying to say with his limited vocabulary, what he's trying to say is there's something missing in the framework of these countries. That's what he's trying to say. And I think I am able to empathize with what he's trying to say because I have a semblance of an understanding of systems, right? It's because I think the way I think. Doesn't mean it's right. These are ideas that I carry. So I can parse apart the person from the idea. I try to listen to what the person is saying. Regardless of if it's right or if it's wrong, I try to listen to what the person is saying, not casting any judgments or dispersions. So those are the three things that a system does, the 3.5 things that systems do. And what Dave is articulating, especially when he talks about the Me Too movement, is the impropriety of how certain oppressed people go about alleviating their oppression. And he compares movement to movement. He compares feminism to LGBTQ to black. And he says, how are certain movements able to succeed and how are certain movements struggling to maintain progress? And the one thing that Dave is saying is structure is the main reason why certain systems maintain their power over oppressed group is because there's a structure to it. And the structure is composed by making oppressed people infight. See, this is what the system is built to do. So when Dave is talking about the worst thing that you can do to a man is take his livelihood, he says this at the end of the special. He's not talking to transgenders. He's not talking to LGBTQ. He's talking to the system. And by the system, he's not talking about LGBTQ. He's talking about the white man. He's talking about how the white man has fixated itself to kowtowing to anything that the LGBTQ are offended by. How they bend over backwards to appease this small group. And it's because this small group has more white people who participate in it than black people. So they think that they are speaking through their systems. And they think that they are still oppressed when they have a substantial amount of power backing their ideology, backing their ideas. They have power backing their ideas. Pro-blackness has just received a sliver of power backing our ideas, and it's fake power. It's not real power. And the reason why it's not real power is because, I've said this before and I'll say it again, it's because there's not a real profound beating intellectual tradition that is foregrounding everybody who believes that they're pro-black. And I had this thought the other day where maybe the baseline interest of black people has shifted so far into the direction of pro-blackness that there is no need for everybody who is pro-black to have an intellectual tradition. Maybe everybody who is pro-black is just pro-black, and that is their philosophical existence now. They just live in pro-blackness, and they don't need to read Dubois, Fanon, Foucault. They don't need to read Jung. They don't need to expand their perspective of what it means to be a human being, because pro-blackness is the state of existence that is normalized now. So when it comes to being a black American, being a pro-black American is just as real. But that's just an idea. Just an idea. But anyway, we're also talking about with Dave Chappelle's special justice, right? And what is the proper justice? For Dave, what I believe that he's saying is empathy is proper justice. And without me skirting the point a little bit, let me double back just 1 second to my point about systems and the LGBTQ. When it comes to canceling or taking a man's livelihood, it is not, I repeat, what Dave is saying, it is not the LGBTQ themselves that are taking the livelihood. They react. They scream. They say this is wrong very loudly. And as a result of that, everybody, the corporations, listen. And as black people, and this is where I kind of disagree with Dave just a little bit, and I'm going to further my disagreement eventually towards the end of the pod, but this is where I kind of disagree with Dave, with where he is saying that we don't have that power, when what has been represented to us in the last 2 years is that we do have that power. We just use it very sparingly. Because we can't agree. The funny thing about the LGBTQ community is that when they think something is transphobic, homophobic, they agree on it. They say, yo, that is transphobic, DaBaby. They say, yo, that is transphobic, Boosie. They all say that is transphobic. They agree. With us, there's a gray area between what we perceive to be systematically racist or negative individual choices or one white person's wrong day or so on and so forth. So when there was that massive moment where there was Karens flooding the news, calling the police on black people, we all, I'll say we as a collective, because we're all in this together, we all reacted negatively to those women, making them lose their jobs. We took things away from them. And these are regular white women off the street. These aren't celebrities, these aren't famous people. And the thing about being a celebrity, a famous white person, they have these racist inclinations themselves, all right? They just know not to say them out loud anymore. The same thing that Lil Boosie is doing, shouting down Lil Nas X, calling him a F-word and hoping that he does. These white celebrities think the same thing. They're just smart enough to not say it on the internet anymore. They have their get off my lawn N-word moments too. They just don't say it on the internet. They have their black people are ruining this country moments. They just don't say it on the internet because the internet is not a real place. But some people live on the internet like it's a real place. Like this is where decisions are actually being made. I have to say this to all of us. Decisions are not being made on the internet. The internet is a vessel of data for decisions to be made, but a lot goes on in the real world. And that's another thing that Dave's special highlights, is a lot is going on in the real world. So if you cancel him on Twitter, or if you're flaming him up on Twitter, using Twitter to influence the real world is kind of, and I don't want to sidetrack this whole conversation by bringing up Meta and Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg. I'll probably talk about that next week. But you're doing a disservice to the real lived experience of many people, you included. So, and what Dave is also trying to say is the otherness. Otherness that exists, and is there camaraderie in the otherness between black people, homosexuals, and transgender? Is there a level of connection that we can link our arms in to say, I agree with you? Because what we are looking for in society is a avatar. And I mentioned this briefly in the last episode. And so I want to double back and focus on it just for a second here. The sense of otherness, the sense of being from a position where we believe that power is divested from us in a system that was built to disrupt our existence overall, what we tend to look for is a representative, an avatar, a being of some level of profound awareness that we can say, ah, I have no power to speak this loud enough for anyone to hear me. I feel comfortable having you speak it for me. I had that level of a transcendent experience when I was watching The Closer for the first time, because what Dave is saying are things that I felt in my heart. I felt these things in my heart before. Like, why are we having this moment between gay people and transgenders and black people? Like, why do they not feel any remorse from tearing us down? And I listened to Dave and I said, wow, I can't believe he is saying these things. It was a shock. Like, he is saying these things boldly, standing up for black famous men. Because black famous men are an oppressed group. But no, really though, like, he's saying these things, you know? And so in him saying these things, I felt, wow, okay, he's giving a voice to what Kyrie Irving says, the voiceless. And how much stock should we place in that? Like, how much stock should we place in the ability of a rich black man giving voice to other rich black men? That's all I'm saying. Funny, poignant, but he's giving a voice to rich black men. On the daily basis, I'm not going to get canceled in my everyday life if I say something homophobic to my girlfriend, or to my homegirl, or to my homeboy. I'm not going to get canceled for saying these things. No, for saying an idea. Maybe a wrong and bad idea. It may not be a healthy idea. It may not be fully formed or fully fleshed out. It may be having some holes in its articulation, but I'm not going to get canceled in my personal life. The moment I walk out of my door and I try to get other people to understand what I think and what I believe, that's when I'm going to risk the possibility of being challenged. And nothing's wrong with a challenge. Saying, hey, you might not be looking at this the right way, Brother Dave. But we cannot forget that this is a class issue and these are rich black people problems. So when we stepping out of our framework and say, yo, leave Dave alone. You can't cancel Dave. He's our avatar. And so we are defending him from a perspective of he spoke up on behalf of black men. No, he really spoke up on the behalf of black rich men. And so what we fail to realize also is that oftentimes when you have been oppressed for so long, we tend to take on the patterns and existences and habits of the oppressor. Right. And one of the things that Dave, I think, is missing, and again, I love Dave. I love Dave Chappelle. But one of the things I think he's missing is how in his Me Too joke, he says he's the guy who left $50 million on the bus and he walked off the bus. That's his legacy, which is a heroic move. Again, you're our avatar, Dave. We're rooting for you. You represent a large part of us. And in that time since he stepped off of the Chappelle show and made $50 million, he made $50 million in other places, he has become an even bigger icon because of that move, because he stood on a principle. And I'm going to give some context and backstory as to why he stepped off. If you guys don't know, why he stepped off is because he was recording, they were shooting an episode of the Chappelle show. And in the shooting, he was wearing a costume. And in wearing the costume, somebody in the production team who he hadn't met before, somebody in the production team was laughing at him in this costume. And it was a racially insensitive costume. And so he had an out-of-body experience and he started to think, okay, I can't tell if this person is laughing at me or laughing with me. And that was the beginning of him questioning what direction is this show going. And as a result of that, he said, I'm going to leave this $50 million on the table. And there might have been other machinations going on inside of his brain, but that was a large part of why he decided to leave it on the table. I am no longer becoming the central controller of my show's audience and my vision. Who am I speaking for? And so he says to the Me Too movement, y'all were inequipped in creating the justice you guys wanted because your goals weren't set, your integrity wasn't set, and you were missing some key aspects of what justice looks like for your specific industry. And I want to foreground that because Dave makes a good point, especially when it comes to feminism. And to my women out there, I checked the analytics. There's only 21% of you guys who listen. So sorry if I offend you guys on this one. But I do want us to take a long, hard look at feminism. And I'm going to write about this in depth in my book. And I'm going to make a podcast episode dedicated towards this in the following months. What feminism is now, today, this wave of feminism, I think it's third or fourth wave feminism. What it is now is the usurpation of masculine power. See, what feminism is now looking like is the usurpation of masculine power. And what that entails is women believe that masculine power is in control of the world, and as a result of that, builds a reasonable amount of contempt for masculine power. And I do put some of this blame at the feet of men in power, because if men were better stewards of power, then women would feel more comfortable with men leading. However, men have been poor stewards of power, hence women rebelling from masculine power. And you can see that as in your relationships. You can see that in your friendships. You can see that all across. Women, unless they are cut from a specific mold of women, a specific traditional mold of women, will test your masculine power to see if you are fit to lead. And that comes as a direct result of this modern incarnation of feminism. So what we don't tend to focus on as a collective when we talk about masculine power is the majority of sufferers, of long-standing sufferers in society, are men. The majority of silent sufferers in society are men. The majority of homeless people on the streets are men. The majority of murdered people are men. The majority of people placed in prison are men. The majority of people doing the tough jobs in society, construction workers, railroad workers, janitors, power line fitters, roofers, are men. But what happens with feminism is it's the power positions, the CEOs, the CFOs, the COOs, the owners, the entrepreneurs, that's what women want. But women don't want to be pipe fitters. And I don't blame y'all. I don't blame women. Women don't want to be janitors. Women don't want to be maintenance women going around apartment complexes and changing light bulbs and refrigerator doors. Women don't want to be doing that. They want the power position. See, when it comes to being a man, you take both the good and the bad. But for some reason, when it comes to power, women want the isolated version of equality, which is give me the office job. Give me the executive job. Let me be a principal. Let me be a superintendent. But you don't want to be a janitor. You can be a maid and a housekeeper, right? And to women, that is their level of subjugation of masculine power. To women, that isn't even a choice. That is a subjugation, but that is a choice too. But for men, we accept the reality of our existence, that there are going to be some of us who have to work these railroads. Right outside my house, I have a train that runs by. That's why I have to pick the moments where I record very carefully. The train sometimes just runs by at any moment. But every now and then, there's men, only men, who are maintaining that train, who are using metalwork, welding, keeping that train together. It is just men out there. There's a homeless shelter being built right up the street from my house. It's only men on that construction site. Only men on top of that roof. Sexism, feminism, patriarchy, I don't know. These ideas, we tend to not grapple with them fully, because what we want in society is our chance to play the position of oppressor. We just want our chance. And I have this theory that I'm working out of my head, that if Hillary Clinton was a traditional feminine woman, she would be the first female president. And I mean this shit. We are not going to have the first woman president until, this is going to sound so crazy, but we're not going to have the first woman president until she is comfortable wearing a dress. She has to be wearing a dress and be beautiful, unfortunately, because that is how shallow men are. Men don't want to be led by Hillary Clinton. We want to be led by our mothers. We don't want to be led by a man with a vagina. We want to be led by our mothers, our aunties, our grandma. We want the true feminine to guide us. We don't want a pantsuit. And I'm being facetious, but like I mean it in a way. Like what we want is femininity. We don't want masculinity coming from a woman to be the leader of the free world. We want a truly feminine leader. Someone who is compassionate, nurturing, caring, loving, empathetic. Put the pantsuit away and put on the beautiful dress, and I guarantee these very shallow and vain Americans who believe that they are a liberal, neoliberal society, who truly deep down inside have a subconscious urge for traditional values, because again, we operate on archetypes. No matter how politically progressive we may think we are animals, biological, archetypal animals. And that is what it's going to take for a woman to be the president, not her masquerading as a masculine woman, but a truly feminine woman. That's who is going to be the first female president. Until then, we're never going to see it. And so Dave Chappelle's whole perspective is kind of isolated in that same vein, where you can't look at change only through your venue of change. You have to deal with what is in front of you. And what is in front of you, which he has that poignant joke, I'll be the one who leads this movement, and all you got to do is insert sexual expletive here. And then he says, right back to where we started, huh? Because again, there are certain qualities between men and women. And the most offensive thing that I think Dave Chappelle said to most people, especially the transgender community, which they have not fully addressed, is that gender is a fact. And I want to expound upon that, because I don't think it was properly given its fair due, both in the special and the commentary that follows. Gender is a fact, but it's a fact in a metaphysical sense. It is a fact in a sense that we hardly scratch the surface of fully understanding and interpreting. It is a fact in a psychological sense, in a biological sense, in a spiritual sense. There are gendered realities here. There's a dichotomous existence that men and women hover. That's why seeing Lil Nas X to Lil Boosie is so like flabbergasting, is because why is this man? Why? Like, there was a clip that came that Floyd Mayweather said, I'm not taking a picture with no man with painted fingernails. Like, why is that so? Why is that so repulsive to certain men? Because there's a archetypal reality that we are living within. And some of us are able to fight that archetypal reality because we wrestle with the concept, wrestle with the idea. And I think that's what everything is coming down to these days. It's how well do we wrestle with ideas, and how much do we attack people as opposed to their inquiries that they're placing forward. There's something that I've done, and I hate to bring it back to me, but what are you going to do? You know, it's my pod. Something that I've done that has helped me in my dealing with people is I separate the behavior from the person. So let's say there's a negative behavior that somebody is doing, right? And I don't like it, and it really just makes me upset. And you have a decision, and that decision is to ask yourself, is it the person that I don't like, or is it the behavior that I don't like? And simply by doing that exercise where you say, no, just because one person does a bad behavior does not mean I don't like the person. I can extract out that behavior, pinpoint it, put it on the wall and say, this is the behavior that I find deplorable, and make that the problem, not the person. And we have to do that same thing with ideas. Let's remove the person, remove the idea. Slap the idea on the wall and say, I don't like this idea. Person, cool. Person has given me a lot of value, presented a lot of things in my life that I appreciate and that I will never forget. Person can stay. Idea must go. How do we get to doing that as a society, as a people? because there's a lot of commonalities that are undergirding our sense of self here. And hopefully I have woven a common thread, and maybe I might even have to listen back to this to, you know, pinpoint the thread, but there's a common thread that I'm trying to get us to see here. That no one thing is just one thing. Everything, there's a theory of everything that all is encompassing, all is attached to. If we just follow the thread close enough, we can see the line. And sometimes I can see the line. I can see the thread that is connecting all things, that gives the, that allows the perception of man to be almost as close to clairvoyant as possible, where you're able to predict both the pain and happiness of an individual or a person or a group by connecting the thread. See, I believe Dave knew what was going to come of him releasing this special. He knew this was going to be the dialogue. It's because he's able to see the thread a little bit. A little bit. He's able to see the thread just a little bit. And he's been living much longer than me. So I think he's a little more wizened in that sense. So he just found the perfect way to articulate his points. And like I said, where I disagree with him is that he believes how his version of justice is the only version of justice. That because he has stepped away from $50 million, that it should be easy for everybody to step away from their position of power or divest themselves easily from their oppressor. But it's hard for many people to divest themselves from their oppressor. Excuse me. It's really difficult. And I do want to touch on, last but not least, what Dave, and this is probably the last thing I disagree with, and it's the worst thing to disagree with, is the story of Daphne. The reason why I disagree with the utilization of the story of Daphne is because it is eerily similar to when a white person accused of racism mentions that they have black friends. Eerily. And they have one black friend. And so they say, I can't be racist. I have a black friend. It's like, really? It's like a man saying, I can't be sexist. I have a wife. It's not really equitable in that sense, right? There's something missing here. But again, if you divest a person from the idea, a person can have sexist ideas but not be a sexist. Very possible. Very possible. Damn it, ladies and gentlemen. I was talking way too much. We're already at minute 53. I don't know what to tell y'all. Like I said, I try to squeeze all this stuff into an hour. Maybe I should extend it a little bit beyond an hour. Because brothers and sisters, when I say I can talk all day, I mean I can talk all day. But we're approaching that time. Next week, what did I say I was going to talk about? I said I was going to talk about Dune this week. So I'm going to push that to next week. I promise I'm going to talk about Dune next week. I'm going to open the podcast with talking about Dune, giving a little deep dive on Dune. I'm also going to talk about the metaverse next week and Mark Zuckerberg and what he just did by renaming Facebook Meta. And I think it's better if I push that to next week because I have to work on my ideas surrounding it. So, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's been a hell of a ride, hell of a journey. I want to say thank you for indulging me. I appreciate you guys. And I wish you well.
I brought 10 of my niggas and my mama too. Double bunked in a hotel to see what I'ma do. Dreams really do come true. Hey, every single day I'm doing something new. Yeah, every single day I'm meeting someone new. Less highs in my replies and it's more who? Cheers to the old days, probably never get them back. My niggas is paid for, they never had to give it back. Trauma ain't a tenant, but somehow I gotta live with that. Niggas dead to me and they mad, they gotta live with that. Made it through the storm, like, where the fuck my ceiling at? Bitch, I don't have one. Junior, I'm my dad's son. Remember being a kid when I first seen my dad gun. Remember I would practice in the mirror before I had one. Dreams of being a good guy and marrying a bad one. Dreams of copping big cribs, they even got my dad one. Moving with love, in a time when niggas move just because. I was a boss before you knew who I was. Nigga, look at the times. Got ahead without looking behind. Pro skater, nigga, look at the grind. We really made it off the F. Back when my granny was watching Chef. Now I'm knocking bitches off my lap. Crazy how it all changed. Every time I shoot, I yell ball game. They scream mine, they don't know y'all name. My niggas helped me get here, so they all came. I just hit this bitch from half court, nigga, ball game. Back in NY, brought the whole gang. Yeah, really independent, fund the whole thing. Ayy, cheers to the old days. Probably never get them back. My niggas is paid for, they never had to give it back. Trauma ain't a tenant, but somehow I gotta live with that. Niggas dead to me and they mad, they gotta live with that. Made it through the storm, like, where the fuck my ceiling at? Bitch, I don't have one. Junior, I'm my dad's son. Nigga, yeah, this shit different. Ayy, it'll never be the same.